For the next few weeks, just kind of a short, self-contained share, is we'll be going over selected aspects of a very, very famous and beautiful, inspiring sefer, a very difficult sefer, and this is the sefer Chovos Halavavos, which means duties of the heart. And, you know, although we like to say that the Musar movements of Rav Yisrael Salanter only began in the 19th century, the Chovos HaLevavos is, of course, a Musar Sefer, but it's much, much earlier. The Chovos HaLevavos was written in the 11th century, the 1000s. And let me just talk about the nature of the Sefer a little bit. The author of the Sefer is Rabbeinu Bachya, or the question how you pronounce it. Bachya, Bachaya, or Bachai. There are three pronunciations. This is an uncommon name. You don't have too many people. You know, most of us are not going to name our children or grandchildren Bachya or Bachaya. It is really a Sephardic name, but it really comes from an Arabic. So it was really only used in Muslim Spain, and the Jews adopted the name. There are two great Gedolim who have the name Bachya, and they're not the same person. Don't confuse them. One is the author of the Sefer Chovos HaLevavos, who is Rabbeinu Bachya or Bachaya Ibn Pakuda. Now, Ibn Pakuda is a family name, just like, for example, people make a mistake with this. The Ibn Ezra is not Rabbi Avraham Ben Ezra. The Ibn Ezra's father was not Ezra. Rather, Ben is Ibn, which is just a family name in Arabic. Similarly, Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Pakuda, his father was not Pakuda. Pakuda is not a first name anyway. Kuda was the family name, and in fact his father's name was Yosef, so it's Rabbeinu Bachya ben Yosef ibn Pakuda. Who was the Ibn Ezra's father? I happen not to remember right now, but it wasn't Ezra. He's not Rabbi Avram ben Ezra. Ibn Ezra is a surname. The other famous Rabbeinu Bachaya or Bachya wrote a commentary on the Chumash, and that's Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher. And that was around 100 years later. So the Chovos HaLevavos precedes the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher is after the Rambam, and after the Rambam as well. So actually they're not the same, but as far as I know, these are the only two rabbis that we know of with this very, very unusual name. Rabbi Bachya ibn Pakuda, was, as I say, in Spain in the 11th century. And he was a dayan, he was a posek, in other words, he was a person who was knowledgeable in halacha as well. But he writes in the introduction to his book that although there are many, many svarim on what are called chovos ha'evarim, duties of the limbs, duties of the limbs are the physical details in carrying out mitzvahs. How does one put on tefillin? How does one daven? How does one keep Shabbos? How does one keep kosher? These are actions, these are deeds, and halacha primarily is involved in what you do or what you don't do. And he says there are many, many svarim dealing with that, but in his time at least, there were virtually no svarim that dealt with what is called chovos halevavot, which are the duties of the heart, and that refers to the internal states that one should feel and one should cultivate in order to serve Hashem properly. Whether it's avas Hashem, love of God, yiras Hashem, reverence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the like. Now, there are many isolated statements in Chazal, of course, that talk about all these things, but there was no sefer that comprehensively dealt with the Chovos HaLevavos in the same way that we have books that deal with Chovos HaEvarim. So we have many, many books on the laws of Shabbos. We had no books on the laws, so to speak, of loving Hashem. Right? So as a result, he decided to devote his sefer and really his life to discussing in a comprehensive way what you might call the internal aspects of being a Jew. With the idea that halacha is the guf, is the body, it physically acts in the world, but the halavavos is the neshama of being a Jew. Now, in many ways, one might say, in a very rough way, that this corresponds to the dichotomy in the Gemara itself between Halacha and Agada. Well, we know that in the Talmud, most of the Talmud, around 65% of the Talmud, is Halacha. It deals with behavior. But then we have a lot of stuff in the Gemara that is called Agadata. And Agadata often, not exclusively, often deals with the values of being a Jew. Now, this is an interesting point, because in many, many ways, one of the occupational hazards of being a religious Jew, and it actually is sometimes a hazard, is that we become so preoccupied, and rightfully so, with detail, that we fail to see the larger picture of the type of person we're supposed to become. In many ways, the Hasidic movement was attempting to go back to the internal values of being a Jew. You know, Hasidim used to make a joke about the Litvisha, because, you know, the halacha is you're supposed to daven mincha before sunset. Yeah. That is the halacha. That is the din. And one should follow that. But Hasidim were not very makbit. Hasidim, even to this very day, for a variety of reasons, they daven mincha after shkia. In fact, Rav Chaim Volozhiner even says it got so bad in his time, he was a disciple of the Vilna Gaon, that if it was time to daven mincha, and a chassid said to another chassid, let's daven mincha, the chassid would look out and see if the sun was up, and if the sun had not gone down yet, he says, it's too early. We can't, you know, they made a point of doing that. So the joke that the Hasidim used to say is that the Litvaks, the Misnagdim, have more Myra for the Shkia than for the Ribono Shel Olam. Now, again, Chas V'Shalom, one should daven mincha before and one has to keep halacha, but in some ways Rabbeinu Bachya was a forerunner of the Baal Shem Tov by some 600 years, in which he is stressing the importance of cultivating an inner feeling in Avodas Hashem and not simply going through the motions. Now, what's interesting is that in many, many ways, the Chovas HaLevavos became extremely mekubal in all segments of Klal Yisrael. Chassidim learned it, Misnagdim learned it. It was a sefer that was universally accepted in Klal Yisrael. But what's interesting is that some of the Hashkafas he mentions in the book were in fact not consistent with the Hashkafas of the yeshiva world as they later developed. Sometimes people are learning a sefer without realizing that some of what the sefer says contradicts some other teachings. Let me give you one example. In the Hakdama of the Chovas HaLevavos, Rabbeinu Bachya criticizes people who learn complex esoteric halachic matters that will never have any practical bearing. He gives the following story of a person who asked his Rav a complicated question in the laws of Gittin, which was totally theoretical. It would never happen. And the rabbi rebuked him by saying, have you already learned everything you need to know to live your life, that you're now asking questions that won't happen in 1,000 years? He says, and the rabbi said, you know how much I learn, how much I study, and you know that for 35 years I work on myself, and I've never thought of this question, because it's never going to happen. In other words, the Chovas HaLevavos was critical. And again, I'm not going to be machriya here, I'm just going to lay out the machlokas. The Chovas HaLevavos was critical of a kind of theoretical, hypothetical learning that was neither focused on halacha lemaisa, nor was focused on how you improve yourself. In other words, it was just a theoretical exercise in mental acuity. That's what the Chovas HaLevavos says. He was critical of it. He says that people are wasting their time. They should focus on how to become a better person or how to know how to serve Hashem better, etc. Now, if you flash forward to the 1700s, the 18th century, the Vilna Gaon's greatest disciple, I already mentioned today, was Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner started the world-famous Volozhiner Yeshiva, which in fact is the mother of all the great yeshivas in Europe. Mir and Slobodka and Telz and Panovich, all of them are outgrowths of Volozhin. Volozhin was closed by the Russian government. That itself is a very fascinating story, because apparently there's a machlokas in the yeshiva world how to understand the closing of Volozhin. Maybe we'll get to that later. Now, Rav Chaim Volozhiner was really one of the great Gedolei Hador in the time of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, other Gedolim, but he wrote a little sefer that is actually the manifesto of the non-Hasidic yeshiva world, And this little sefer is called Nefesh HaChaim. And in particular, Nefesh HaChaim is based a lot on Kabbalah. But in the fourth gate of the Nefesh HaChaim, he writes about the greatness of Torah study as the supreme virtue that exists in the world. And as I say, that's literally is the Bible of every non-Hasidic yeshiva, really in the world. And one of his points is that no matter what you learn in Torah, even if you learn in Torah that which doesn't seem to be practical, and it doesn't seem to be relevant, and it seems to be hypothetical, and it's never going to happen in a million years, it connects you to the essence of God. And by connecting you to the essence of God, it purifies you, it elevates you, it sanctifies you. And this is what we learn. Anyone, any of your children, your husbands, anyone in your family that's gone to a yeshiva has heard this over and over and over again. It's deeply ingrained in the consciousness of a Ben Torah that no matter what we learn in Torah, it connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I just want to point out that the Chovas HaLevavos L'Aniyas Da'ita would actually disagree with that preposition. So it's an amazing thing. People learn the Chovas HaLevavos and people learn the Nefesh HaChaim without being aimed on the fact that there is somewhat of a contradiction in their approach to spiritual growth. The Nefesh HaChaim felt that Talmud Torah will bring you wherever you have to go. The Chovas HaLevavos feels that you have to consciously strive to build up. Now, by the way, later in the 19th century, this was Gufei Machlokas between the Musar movements and some other yeshivas like Brisk. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter also said one has to consciously strive for ethical development. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, you don't need Musar. Limud HaTorah itself is going to be misaking all of your midos, right? So this is kind of a machlokas in Klal Yisrael. So, but be it as it may, the Chovas HaLevavos, as I say, was a very, very beloved sefer. In fact, shortly after it was written, the Rambam writes, and the Rambam almost never quotes any other sefer, the Rambam writes that the Chovas HaLevavos was his father's favorite sefer, that his father would read it constantly and learn from it constantly. Now, the Chovas HaLevavos was written not in Hebrew. The Chovas HaLevavos was written in Arabic, as were many, many great works. A number of the Rambam's own works were written in Arabic. The commentary to the Mishnah, the Mora Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed, was written in Arabic. Chovas HaLevavos was written in Arabic. But like all of these Arabic works, they were translated into Hebrew fairly early. And the most well-known translator at the time, in the Middle Ages, of Arabic works into Hebrew were the Ibn Tibbon family. And there were two brothers, Yehuda Ibn Tibbon and Shmuel Ibn Tibbon. There's some others as well. And the Chovas HaLevavos was translated by Rav Yehuda Ibn Tibbon. So when you read the Chovas HaLevavos in Hebrew, you are reading a translation. When you read it in English, you are reading a double translation because the translators in English do not know Arabic. They are working off the Hebrew, which in itself is a translation. Now, there was a great Yemenite Rav who died a few years ago. I can't remember his name. Rav Kapach, that's right. Rav Kapach. Now, Rav Kapach, Yemen, Arabic was his native language. So Rav Kapach retranslated into modern Hebrew all of the Arabic classics. So he retranslated the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos, the Mora Nevuchim, and the Chovas HaLevavos. So if you get the Kapach, you can actually get a direct translation from the Hebrew. The Ibn Tibbon translations are a bit cumbersome because part of the problem was that Ibn Tibbon translated too literally, following the order of the words. And this is always a problem in translation because syntax differs in different languages. So, for example, this is a very simple example. Vayomer Hashem. Now, literally, it means, and said God. But in English, we don't put the verb before the noun. So in English, it says, and God said. Ibn Tibbon would translate it, and said God. In other words, he followed the exact order of the words, which sometimes creates a bit of confusion. Also, the problem was, and the Rambam says this as well, although it's something we wouldn't like to say necessarily, but the Rambam says it, that the Hebrew language in the Middle Ages did not contain a vocabulary of philosophical words, meaning, say, Arabic was actually richer in philosophical terminology than Hebrew. So the Hebrew language at the time of the, because it hadn't been spoken for so many years, at the time of these authors, didn't really have a vocabulary that could adequately express a number of these categories, so it was often very cumbersome. Today, modern Hebrew has borrowed, so to speak, different terms, and therefore it's more suitable for certain philosophical discourse. So be it as it may, it was in Arabic and it was translated into Hebrew. There is a modern Hebrew paraphrase of Chovas HaLevavos, not from the Arabic, but it goes from the Hebrew to the Hebrew. But it's very, very good. It makes it much simpler. And this is called the Leiv Tov by Rav Pinchas Lieberman, and that's a very, very good edition of the Chovas HaLevavos. Now, to go into the structure of the Sefer itself, it has a hakdama, an introduction, and then it has 10 chapters that are called shiarim. Each one is called a gate, and these refer to the chovos of levavos. By the way, the other term that he uses, which is a very popular term in the world of Musar, is chochmat hamitzpun. Maybe you've heard that expression. The Bali Musar use it, but it's taken from the chovos of levavos. That means the wisdom that is concealed within you. The wisdom of self-knowledge, the wisdom of knowing yourself, the wisdom of understanding your feelings and emotions and turning them towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is called mitzpun, because unlike chovas ha'evarim that are external, the duties of the limbs, the duties of the heart are within your personality. And it takes a while to know yourself, and then to work on yourself, and to improve yourself, and the like. So that's called mitzpun. Mitzpun is also occasionally used for conscience. Now there's everything that's inside of you that is there, right? So chovas halavavos is also called chochmas hamitzpun. Mitzpun or matzpun, it's mem tzadik pei vavnun. They pronounce it matzpun, I'm not sure. Okay, matzpun, okay. Chochmas hamitzpun, okay. This is the problem when I read without vowels, I don't always get it right. Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing. Let me just mention, though, a very fascinating comment. And again, I'm skipping a few centuries. On one hand, the Chovas HaLevavos talks about the importance of ethical development, of not focusing on theoretical, esoteric learning that does not connect to building yourself in your service of Hashem. But let me point out that the person that you might have assumed is the polar opposite, the Vilna Gaon, whose primary endeavor in his whole life was the unrelenting, constant studying of Torah in all of its facets. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner took that from the Vilna Gaon in the Nefesh HaChaim. Let me point out that the Vilna Gaon himself makes a comment about Torah learning that is really very, very amazing, and you would think is almost out of character. Everybody knows the famous statement in Chazal that Torah is compared to water. Right? Everybody knows Torah is compared to water. And we give different reasons for that. Just like water nourishes, Torah nourishes, water sustains life. Just like water goes from high ground to low ground, the Torah leaves the arrogant and goes to the humble. Right? Everybody knows that. But listen to what the Vilna Gaon says. This is amazing. I once said this in Lakewood, and they started yelling at me because how dare I say it? But it's the Vilna Gaon, not me. Of course, he didn't believe the Vilna Gaon said. Okay, but the Vilna Gaon says the following: if you pour water on a field, whatever is in the field is going to grow. If it's wheat, you'll get wheat. If it's weeds, you'll get weeds. If it's poisonous plants, you'll get poisonous plants. Torah accentuates and brings out whatever is within the person. If the person has goodness and kindness and compassion. The learning of Torah will make him a more compassionate, kinder person. Indeed. But here is the kicker. If a person has arrogance, gaiva, not only will Lomad HaTorah not improve him, it will make him worse. It will give him another forum in which his gaiva and his arrogance and his one-upmanship may come out. And therefore the Vilna Gaon says, you cannot simply say, I'll learn Torah and I'll become a better person. Rather, one must consciously strive to improve their midos and to work on their midos tovos. Very, very amazing. This is exactly the point of the Chovos HaLevavos. The Vilna Gaon, this is in Mishle, his commentary in Mishle. Torah is compared to water.
No, but where does he say that the Torah will bring out whatever you have in you?
No, this, in Mishle, yeah. In Mishle, yeah. I'll try to get to the exact source right now. I don't have the exact parak for this. But this is a very, very amazing, this is a very, very amazing thought, because it does remind us that Limud HaTorah alone is not a panacea. And this is expressed in other ways as well. Torah is the diet to keep a healthy person healthy. Yes. Torah is the diet that maintains health. But you see, just as when a person is sick, they must supplement the diet with medicine and with special exercises. So too, when there is our sicknesses in the soul, and all of us to some degree have some sickness of the soul, one must supplement that Torah with the therapies that heal the soul and the like. Okay, one cannot say Torah is not, just like Torah is not psychological therapy.
Oh.
Torah is by itself is not automatically spiritual therapy when there's sickness. When you achieve health, Torah keeps you healthy. Okay, so these are things to think about. This is what the Chovos HaLevavos is about. Now, one other unique feature about the Sefer, besides the fact that it was written in Arabic, one unique feature is that the Chovos HaLevavos draws, number one, on Tanakh, which is obvious. Number two, on Chazal, which is also obvious. Number three, which is a little less obvious, is he draws on Chachmei Umos HaOlam quite a lot. He does not refer to them as Goyim, but when he says Omar HaChacham, it's been shown that he's often referring to the Sufi mystics in the Islamic tradition who taught various aspects of life. And this is consistent with what the Rambam later says, who also did the same. Kabel ha'emes mimi sha'amro. One should be willing to accept truth from whatever source that it comes. So the Chovos HaLevavos was perfectly willing to draw on the teachings of various Islamic philosophers and mystics. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sufi. Sufi is S-U-F-I. It was a school of mysticism that existed in Spain at the time. Yes? Well, no. Torah, no. It says, Chachma bagayim tamin. If they tell you there is wisdom among the goyim, you do believe it. Torah bagayim al tamin. Now, the question is, what's Chachma and what's Torah? But apparently, Chachma includes, in the Chovos HaLevavos' reading, not just technology, but even aspects about improving character and midos. Now, that itself is a little controversial. You know, again, it's very interesting. On one hand, the Chovos HaLevavos is 1,000% Mekubal as an authoritative sefer. But there are things that, you know, some people might not agree with today. Let me give you maybe an example that's a superficial example. And it's not so much Nogeya in Eretz Yisrael, but it's very Nogeya in Chutz Laretz, where B'nai Torah attend college more often than they do here. And that is, you know, in American yeshivos, it's quite common that students go to college also. And they say it's mutter because of Parnassa, it's mutter to make a living, you know, whatever the cheshbon is. And people say, well, it's okay to take science courses, it's okay to take mathematics courses, because those are objective things, and they talk about how the world works, etc. But once you get into the realm of philosophy or literature or humanities, that's a bad way to go, because that deals with values and ethics and morals and perspectives. And the only legitimate source for morals and ethics and values and perspectives is Torah. So I can look to the Goyim for how a cell phone works or how a computer works, and if they invented whatever it is, Windows or whatever it is, you know, fine, I can use that. But I'm not supposed to look to Goyim as to how to live my life.
No.
And I think that's a very sensible position. And yet we find that at least selectively, of course you have to be like Rabbeinu Bechaya to do it, but selectively, this Gadol was willing to extract kernels of wisdom. Of course, once he brings it in, it now becomes part of Torah and we learn it. But I'll give you another example. Rav Shlomo Volba, the great Rav Volba, was really one of the last great Balei Musar. Do you know that for a while he was in Switzerland, and he actually was an assistant to Jean Piaget. Piaget, the very famous child psychologist. And he incorporated many, many insights. In fact, in his work on Zeriya Ubinyan Bechinuch, which is a very beautiful book in which he talks about two ways of raising a child. One is by planting a seed, where the concept is you allow the child to develop from within versus building, which is superimposing things on the child. He says was modeled a lot on Piaget, which he then used by using Chazal to kind of support what was Emes and the like. So all I can say is that there were many, many great Chachamim who were willing to look to the Umos HaOlam, not just for technical detail, but even for insight into the human condition. Now, for most of us, maybe that's a dangerous road. Most of us don't have the judgment necessarily to know what is good and what is bad. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what the Gemara says about learning from an apikoros, right, which is a Jewish apikoros. Do you remember the story? Rabbi Meir, the great Tana Rabbi Meir, continued to learn from the heretic Elisha ben Avoya, even after Elisha ben Avoya abandoned Judaism. And when they said to Rabbi Meir, how can you learn from an apikoros? He's going to teach you things that are false. And Rabbi Meir said, he is like a pomegranate. I throw away the peel and I eat the edible seeds. I can differentiate. So sometimes, you know, when kids want to take, in fact, the worst thing to take in college is Jewish studies, actually. That's absolutely the worst, because there you're actually taking the texts of Torah and you're distorting them. So on the other hand, a lot of yeshiva guys in the States like to take Jewish studies courses because they figure, you know, they already, you know, it's an easy A. They think, little do they know, but they think it's an easy A and the like. And when they say, but the teacher's going to say apikoros, the teacher's going to say, you know, Chas v'Shalom, the Torah wasn't written by Hashem, or whatever it's going to be. So they say, no, I'll be like Rabbi Meir, you know. But if you want to be like Rabbi Meir, you got to be like Rabbi Meir. If you're not Rabbi Meir, you're not necessarily capable of doing it. And I will tell you on a more serious vein, that there are people, of religious people, who have taken these courses who have unfortunately been affected in their emunah. So it's not a simple matter. Okay. Now, going back to the gates, so we have the Hakdama of the Chavos HaLevavos. Then we have 10 gates. The first gate is called Shar HaYichud, the gate or the chapter of the oneness of God. This is the most controversial part of the Chavos HaLevavos. In fact, in the modern Hebrew adaptation of Rav Lieberman that I mentioned, he does not paraphrase this shar. He just prints it, and he says, his translation starts with chapter 2, and he gives you a 50-page introduction why he's not translating or retranslating chapter 1. And a common quote of the Vilna Gaon is, all of the Chavos HaLevavos is wonderful starting from chapter 2. Don't learn chapter 1. And again, the Mechaber of Lieberman has like 50 quotations that kind of say the same thing. What's the big deal with the Shar HaYichud? What's the problem with the Shar HaYichud? Rabbeinu Bachya took the position that before he would go into the ideas of how you serve Hashem and what you feel and how you work on yourself, he wanted to philosophically and rationally prove the existence of Hashem and the unity of Hashem through logical formulas. And Shar HaYichud is essentially a philosophical demonstration of the existence of the Almighty and the unity of Hashem and the non-materiality of Hashem. And it's very similar to what the Rambam himself does in the second chelik of the Mori Nevuchim later. The Rambam did it in more detail. So what's the problem with that? So here we get back into the old issue where many Rishonim and Achronim felt it was improper to investigate the philosophical questions of whether God exists or not. Because Chas V'Shalom, if a person is already a Mamin, Right? I'm Mamin because my parents taught me, I'm Mamin because this is what I learned as a child. Why should I reopen a Pandora's box where Chas V'Shalom, I'm going to raise questions and maybe I won't understand the answers properly? So many Rishonim took the position that it is wrong to try to philosophically investigate whether or not Hashem exists, even if you're going to come out that He does, because Chas V'Shalom, there'll be too many korbanos. That's why, for example, in the yeshiva world, every Beis Medrash in the world will have the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, but most of them don't have the Mori Nevuchim. Right? Why don't you learn the Mori Nevuchim? The Rambam wrote it. Answer, because Mori Nevuchim deals with philosophical issues about the Metzias Hashem, and it was thought that what's called Emuna Pshuta, pure faith that is not based on philosophical inquiry, was superior. Now, Lemaisa, you have to understand that it all depends on the type of person. Obviously, if there are people who are coming from a background where they were not connected to Judaism, and they've already been exposed to apikorsis and kfira and atheism, so sometimes they need to see philosophically how Judaism would respond to that, because they already know the other side. That's a different thing. So whether it's Eish HaTorah or Samech, those types of mosos have to deal with that. Just like, for example, if I do anti-missionary work, I have to know about Christianity and the Christian Bible. Right? Because I have to know how to refute things. But the Rishonim say, for the person who was not exposed to it, you're opening up a box of great dangers. So that's why historically there's been kind of a reluctance to learn the Shar HaYichud, the Mori Nevuchim, and the like. But let me point out that this itself actually boils down to a halachic dispute about the mitzvah of Emunah. What is the first of the Ten Commandments, right? The first of the Aseret HaDibros is Anoichi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hatzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, right? I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. Is that a mitzvah? Now, it's not a mitzvah in the sense of God saying you shall, it's just a statement. I am Hashem, who took you out of Egypt. So the Rambam says, Maimonides writes in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that Anoichi Hashem Elokecha is one of the 613 commandments. What is it a commandment of? It is a commandment to believe in Hashem. This is what the Rambam says. Ramban says, that makes no sense. How can you give a person a commandment to believe in Hashem? If I already believe in Hashem, I don't need a commandment. Elamai, I don't believe in Hashem. So I go over to you and I say, you must believe in Hashem. And I say, why? Because Hashem says so. But if I don't believe in Hashem, so because of this, the Ramban writes, Emunah is not a mitzvah per se. Emunah is a foundation and a prerequisite for all other mitzvahs. If I'm not a mammon, I can't be makabel other commandments of God. But you can't call emuna a commandment. Because if I don't believe in the mitzaveh, the commander, I cannot be a mitzuveh, I cannot be a person commanded. Now, I want to point out, though, that there is one textual source in the Gemara that supports the Rambam's view that Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah, and that is a Gemara in Makos, a very famous Gemara in Makos. The Gemara at the end of Makos says that there are 613 mitzvahs that Hashem gave us, right? Taryag. Yeah. And the remez to Taryag is the pasuk, Tairah Siva Lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us Torah. Torah Bigamatria is 611. So Frek de Gemara, Kasha, that's only 611. Where do you get 613? Answer, Moshe gave us 611, but two commandments we heard directly from Hashem. And what are the two? Anochi and Lo Yelecha. You shall not have any other gods. Now, Lechari, you see Beferish in the Gemara. Anochi is one of the mitzvahs. That's what it says. But even if the Rambam has a textual proof, the Ramban's question is a very compelling question. How can there be a mitzvah to believe? Who is it directed to? If I'm already a believer, I don't need a mitzvah. If I'm not a believer, making it a mitzvah is not going to convince me. So here's what the Mefarshim say the Rambam Shita is. Avada, the mitzvah is directed to a believer. But the person who is the believer because he was makabelit through a tradition. The chiyav of emuna is to take what you accepted as blind faith and develop it as a rational, philosophical idea that you now know is intellectually true. In other words, according to the Rambam, and of course this is why the Rambam wrote what he wrote, the mitzvah of emunah is machayev a person to intellectually convince himself of the existence of God. Which once again is consistent with exactly what the Rambam does and what the Chavos HaLevavos does. On the other end, is, in fact, this actually was the shita of Rav Noach Weinberg. Right, that's why he has these different lecture series about the proofs of God. He held very strongly that this was a fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa of emuna. On the other hand, we have the other shita in Klal Yisrael that was very, very much afraid of opening up these types of questions because chas v'shalom, it could lead a person astray and the dangers were not worth it. Again, I'm not here to be machri, and I hope I'm not confusing people by bringing all these different shitas in, but as you probably already knew, this was a sharp divide in Klal Yisrael. To some degree, it was even the geographical divide. It's very interesting that the Gedolim of Spain, call them Sfardim, whatever, tended to emphasize very much this type of philosophical exploration. The Gedolim of Ashkenaz, France and Germany, whether it's Rashi, Tosvos, those Gedolim, tended to shy away from it. So you almost have a division between Ashkenazim and early Sfardim. Later Sfardim became the same as Ashkenazim in that way, but the pre-Kabbalistic Sfardim were very much connected to a philosophical, rationalistic tradition. Ashkenazim were not so attracted to it, and later with Kabbalah, it even became less connected. Yeah.
I could see how you could look at Anochi Hashem Malkecha Asher Hatzeis as a mitzvah, because there were people at the time who believed in a higher force. Yeah, this, obviously things go on, and day turns into night, and so, and you could theoretically think that there is some higher force out there. We're not really identifying it. I mean, those who identified it as a Bodhisattva is one thing. I'm talking about those who really did not believe an idol can do this thing. But something is out there that's a higher force. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So when Hashem gave the Ten Commandments and started it with, I know,
what he was really telling us was, just want you to know, in case you're thinking that there's a higher force, or not, I am that higher force that took you out of the crime, and things that, et cetera.
Yeah, but you see, what you're saying is correct, but you see, that it's hard to put that in the nature of a command, because if I don't yet believe it...
So you believe there's a higher force, but you can't really pinpoint what it is.
Oh, so he's identifying what... Okay.
I am that higher force.
Yeah, that's a possibility. And of course, keep in mind, too, that the Khuzri already raises the question, why does the Ten Commandments say, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt? Why doesn't it say, I'm the God who created heaven and earth? Yeah. And part of it is... because the Jews experienced Yetzias, and therefore they could connect that this is the supreme God because of what they themselves experienced. So be it as it may, I'm not giving you a psak that you can't learn Shahar Yichud, you know, depending, but Shahar Yichud is the controversial one. Just to mention a few of the other gates afterwards, the second gate, which is especially beautiful, is called Shahar HaBechina. Now Shahar HaBechina means the gate of examination, but it's not referring to examining yourself. That's another gate in Mechavas Halvavas. But it refers to the idea that to be an Eved Hashem, you have to learn to notice what's going on in the world. And the more you notice, the more you become aware of the Chastei Hashem, the more your heart is filled with gratitude and appreciation for everything Hashem has done. And therefore, Bechina is the idea of noticing. Rav Avigdor Miller, who by the way also wrote, they're printing now, he gave Shiurim on Chavos Halvavos for 50 years, for many, many years. So they're now doing transcripts of his Shiurim on Chavos Halvavos. So they're actually something that would be very, very special to get a hold of. But Shahar HaBechina was probably the main influence in his life in some ways. Because he always wrote over and over again about the notion of appreciation. In one of his books, he has a famous, what you might call meditation on an apple or a banana. It's like a 20-page thing. You pick up an apple, you know, look at the color and the smell and the acidity together with the sweetness and see how they're balanced together, and the banana. And the whole idea was that before you eat, not just make a bracha, but think about the kindness of Hashem. And the fact that Hashem has given us, going back to Rabbeinu Bechaya, music and color, many things that are not needed for survival. He could have made food to be mush, like they give on astronauts, you know. Food didn't have to smell good or taste good. But these are the Chastei Hashem, the loving kindness of Hashem. And Shahar HaBechina calls upon us to learn to see what's going on, to appreciate. In fact, it's very notable that the Hebrew expression for gratitude is hakara tatov. Now, if you translate it very literally, hakara tatov is not appreciation, it is recognizing. In other words, the first step is to see what's here. If you don't even notice, there's nothing to say thank you for. Right, so that's Shahar HaBechina. Again, it's a very, very beautiful shahar in terms of learning how to notice things and then appreciate things. Now, I want to point out, I mentioned this before, a cute story with Rav Miller. And again, this is one of his guiding principles, that his granddaughter once came to see him in Flatbush. She came into his apartment and she saw him standing over a kitchen sink with his head in the water. She had no idea what this was, so she pulls him out of the water and says, Zadie, what's going on? And he says, I was taking a walk in the street in Flatbush, and I always like to appreciate the air and my ability to breathe, but my walking companion says, oh, the air is polluted today. And that made me feel a little bad. I wasn't so grateful for the bad air. So I wanted to put my head in an environment where I couldn't breathe at all. And I was only going to do it for a few seconds. And then I realized the air wasn't so bad, you know, Baruch Hashem. Now, again, I tell people, do not try this at home. It is in fact, dangerous. But once again, I guess that Tzaddik might have bitachon that Hashem is going to protect him in that way. But that's Shahar HaBechina. Now, the third gate is Shar Avodas Elokim, and it simply flows that once you're makir all of the chesed that Hashem does for us, all of the kindness, all of the goodness, it now translates into the duty of serving Hashem as a way of expressing our gratitude. In other words, Bechina is to know what you have to be grateful for. Avodas Elokim is your response to that gratitude by striving to serve Hashem. The fourth gate is Shar HaBitachon. And Shar HaBitachon is, once again, I mean, I don't want to choose favorites, but many, many people feel Shar HaBitachon philosophically might be the most important chapter in Chavos HaLevavos, because Chavos HaLevavos explains the idea that everything that happens to us is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore he discusses the great difficulty of how do you balance bitachon and hishtadlus, because that's always a problem. Hashem determines your parnasa. Hashem determines everything that's going to happen to you. So why do I have to work? And if I do, how much do I have to work? In other words, the Chavos HaLevavos basically says, and this is where, this is the unknown, that if Hashem decrees you're going to get a certain amount, no matter how much extra you work, you will not get a mustard seed more than Hashem has given you. On the other hand, if you don't do what you're mechuyev to do for hishtadlus, you're not going to get that either. So the question is, what's the line exactly? Now, it's a very difficult problem. Yosef HaTzadik is in jail, and Yosef HaTzadik asks the Sar HaMashkim, please remember me to Paro. He took a relatively minor step to get himself out of jail. And Hashem says, lack of emunah, you're staying another 2 years. What's going on? Yosef is not supposed to do anything? So here I want to point out, the Chavos HaLevavos has a famous shita here, and we'll have to leave more elaboration for later, that there's a certain circularity in hishtadlus and bitachon, and that is, the stronger your bitachon, the less you need to do in the physical world to merit the chaste Hashem. The weaker your bitachon, the more you have to work to open up the heavenly gates. So, it's kind of a vicious circle in the sense that if I don't have the bitachon, then I'm not going to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sashgacha in such an open way. If I have a... So Amela, the taina on Yosef was that because of Yosef's righteousness, he should not have employed the hishtadlus that he did. But for any one of us, not only wouldn't it have been improper, it would have been mandatory. So what is mandatory for some people can actually become usur for other people. Person has to know their madrega, right? That's a very complicated and difficult issue. But this is the famous sheet of the Chavos HaLevavos. The Nitziv doesn't quote the Chavos HaLevavos, but the Nitziv makes the very same point about the Navi Shmuel. And of course, saying it by Shmuel is a big chiddush. Shmuel is Shokol Kamosha V'Aaron. But if you remember, when Hashem tells Shmuel, go and anoint David HaMelech, so Shmuel says, Eich Eilech, how can I anoint David when Shaul is still around? Shaul is going to hear what I'm doing, he's going to kill me. So Hashem said, I'll give you a stratagem to fool Shaul. Make believe, go and bring a korban in Beis Lechem, etc. You were allowed to bring korbanos outside of the mikdash in those days. There was no Beis Mikdash in those days. And that way Shaul will think you're bringing a korban. So the Nitziv asks the Kasha, why didn't Hashem give him the idea in the first place? In other words, Hashem tells him to go, and Hashem doesn't give him any way to protect himself. The Nitziv says, had Shmuel not have been afraid, had Shmuel simply said, Hashem is sending me, I will be okay, he wouldn't have needed any stratagem. He wouldn't have needed any pretense. But when he's asking and he's frightened, so at some point he had lost that supreme madrega of emuna, he becomes mechuyev in a hishtadlus, right? In other words, the chiyev of hishtadlus comes only when there was a lack of emuna. Now, they say the story when the Brisker Rav, Rav Velva Soloveitchik, got married, his father-in-law was originally a very, very wealthy person, and he had given him several buildings in which he could live off the rent, and he would be able to learn his whole life. Right, the Nadan was essentially setting him up for learning his whole life. As is always the case, almost always the case, however, the father-in-law got bankrupt way after the marriage, and everything fell apart, and the Brisker Rav had no means of support. Eventually he became a Rav, but you know, how much was that money anyway? But he had no means of support, and he was very, wasn't his father-in-law's fault, but the Brisker Rav was very, very crushed. He had no way of continuing in learning, so he thought. So it says he locked himself up into a room, and he learned the Shara Bitachon of the Chayvas HaLevavos for several days. And then he came out of the room and he says, Hashem gave me back the diamonds. Hashem gave me back something more than all the money that I lost. The diamonds of feeling serene in the connection with Hashem. And this is again what Rabbeinu Bechaya says, that Bitachon, he says, is the sweetest of all the midos, because it gives a person menuchas hanefesh, serenity, calmness. No matter what's happening in one's life, one knows Hashem is taking care of them. And therefore, he said, it is the most beautiful midah that one could have, because it gives a person chizuk in every aspect of life. Okay, as I say, so many consider the Shara Bitachon to be the jewel of the jewels of the Sefer Chayvas HaLevavos. Okay, we'll stop here. As I say, what I'd like to go through, if you want to read ahead, if you have your own Chayvas HaLevavos, the three gates that I'd like to focus on, and I don't know if we'll get through them, is Shara Bechina, which is the looking at the world, Shara Bitachon, and the last gate is Shara Avas Hashem. Again, there's beautiful things in the whole Sefer, but we're not going to be able to go through the whole Sefer, unfortunately. Okay?